Firstly, I should explain this podcast is unsuitable for minors. So if you're listening to this without adult supervision, you need to know this is unsuitable for you, firstly. Secondly, the boogeyman is real. If I tell someone not to be afraid of the Joker, I can do that. That's just a character from, I can show you his first appearance in a comic book in the 1930s. He's not real. So he's just a thing you're remembering from popular culture. The same is not true of the boogeyman. There isn't some book called The Boogeyman's Grand Day Out, The Boogeyman's Big Adventure, The Boogeyman's whatever he does. Now maybe that'll change at some point. Maybe Pixar will decide to do a thing about the boogeyman. I don't know. Or there'll be one of these Marvel TV universe things. Until then, no. If your child says the boogeyman is there, you need an explanation for that. Or maybe you don't. Maybe you see it differently, and that's fine too. It's none of my business. I know nothing about raising children anyway. I've never raised a child in my life. I've no idea how to raise a child or how to tell them about the boogeyman or how to tell them not about the boogeyman. Are you supposed to tell them it doesn't exist? Are you supposed to tell them you're imagining something, therefore there's something wrong with your brain, we need to get your brain? They never say that, by the way. You never seem to say that. You parents, the child comes out in the middle of the night. She says, I'm having a nightmare and the boogeyman is in my room. You never hear about parents saying, oh, you're imagining a monster in your room in the middle of the night that's come out of nowhere and you believe it. Oh, that's very worrying. We need to go and get you checked out. We might have to check you into a sleep clinic at best, or possibly into a mental institution for a couple of weeks while we sort this out, because it's not normal to think that there's a monster in your room and to be so afraid of it that you have to go and wake up your parents. Even after you've woken up and turned on the lights, you think it's still there. That's very worrying. Now, there's nothing wrong with being mentally ill, but it may well mean you're mentally ill and we need to get you treatment for that. We go to our family doctor. We say, our child thinks there's a monster in the room. The doctor will probably go, well, tell me about where you live. Do you live in a dangerous area? Is it particularly dangerous? Are there monsters around? Is there a lot of gangland violence? And let's say it's not. So your parents say, oh, no, we live in a quite a pleasant housing estate in the suburbs. It's called Evergreen Mountain Terrace. It's a lovely place, actually. We've got a big semi-detached house. There's children playing everywhere. There's a nice little local convenience store. Bus service comes by. It's a nice, sunny place. Very nice, actually. It's very nice. And there's no monsters. There's low crime rates. The chances of there being a monster in our child's room are very, 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 very low. The only thing I can think of, there wouldn't be monsters in the room. The only thing I can think of would be if there's a child molester or something, but that would be a human being. It wouldn't be some monster with horns and a green face and talons. So unless they're seeing a human in the room, there's no way it's real. But there's no monsters in our area. It's a good neighborhood. We don't have monsters on the loose. Unless the only thing I can think of is if there's a zoo nearby, and there isn't. There isn't a zoo nearby. There's a zoo in Dublin. They don't have monsters in it. The nearest thing they have to monsters is lions and tigers, and I think we'd recognise those. Hopefully our child would recognise those. They wouldn't say, Mummy, Daddy, there's a big monster in my room. No, they'd say, there's a huge cat in my room. And much as we like cats because they're nice, I'm a bit worried about this cat because it's very big. It might accidentally step on me or hurt me or something innocently. See, they explain that to your family doctor and they say, oh, I see. So you think the chances of there being an actual monster in the room are very low. Okay, so that means your child is, unfortunately, your child is very seriously mentally ill. That's okay. You have insurance, don't you? You have medical insurance. We'll put him into a mental home for a couple of weeks and then he'll be right as rain. We'll try and do it during the summer break from school and no one even notices. And by the time they're out, it'll be great. There'll be no more monsters. Now, if you come back after that and then one night they get up and they say there's monsters in the room, you might want to call in a security consultant then. I know the chances of this seem very low, but if your child seems to be still experiencing monsters after we give them the full 2-week treatment in the psychiatric service, then you might need to have a security audit of your home, see if there's any chance to actual monsters again, who look like monsters coming up somehow from the sewers or something, I don't know. Anyway, that's about all I know about raising children, to be honest, because I don't have any. I've absolutely no children in this house of any kind. We just have kittens. And they're a bit different, I will admit. There's a book my mother used to read about 30 years ago, I think it came out, called To School Through the Fields. And it was about some woman who grew up, as my parents did, going to school through the fields. These places, you could just walk to school through the fields, you could just ignore the map, ignore the layout of the road system, and just decide, I need to go over there now, so I'm going to walk through the fields, because it's over that way. You get out your compass, there you go. Our house is here. My school is over there in the village. It's kind of over that way. You just go through the fields, trespassing. Well, maybe your parents owned the fields, or the parents of the other children owned the fields, and you all allowed people to trespass on your property. I suppose that's possible. There was an advertisement on Irish television for Brennan's white sliced bread, or maybe there were other varieties. The Brennan's bread brand, anyway. It's a brand of sliced bread that people seem to think is great here. They think, oh, this is great because it tastes fresh. They have a reputation for having bread that tastes slightly fresher than the other bread in the shop, as long as you eat it within 3 hours of purchase. Anyway, they had an ad that showed people walking through the fields, except the fields were in the city centre. I don't know how they did it, but they basically grew straw in the streets around Merrion Square in Dublin. Maybe they did it with camera trickery, I don't know. But they showed some child walking through the fields in the centre of Dublin City, where all the Georgian houses are. And you're supposed to think, oh, this is great. She got her Brennan's bread and now everything's a field, and that's great. It set his country back 100 years to when that area was full of fields. Anyway, they had this girl walking through the fields, pushing her hands against the straw, probably poisoning it. That's someone's crop. Some poor farmer has spent the whole year growing that, keeping it perfect and untouched by greasy child hands. And now she's going walking through it just the same way as your man in Gladiator. Maybe it was meant to look like that. The movie Gladiator. It's about this fellow. He's an Australian with an English accent. Now he's in that place in Rome where they have the gladiators and things. And these, they show flashbacks or flash forwards or views of the afterlife or something, where he's walking through the fields and thinking about all his family who have been murdered and who he's getting revenge for. But he does exactly the same thing. They show him wandering through some fields, touching the crops, interfering with the crops. That's even worse then, because his hands are covered in blood, probably, because he's been going around murdering people. Well, maybe it's not murder. He's participating in government-run gladiator contests in which he's being forced to run. It's probably against international law, is it? Probably is. Well, it's not illegal there. It's been state-sanctioned. It's just that other states have de-sanctioned it internationally. I don't know what international law was like in those days. The whole place was run by Rome, wasn't it? I think so. Was Ireland part of Rome? I'm not sure. Anyway, my mother used to read this book called To School Through the Fields. Some woman who grew up down the country, lived on a farm, I presume, or something like that. It was all, oh, look, aren't we great? We went to school through the fields. We didn't walk along the road. We didn't go and get on some bus. I look down now on children who get a lift to school and who spend 20 minutes in the car talking to their parent every morning. You're not supposed to want to spend time with your child in the car in the morning before they go off to school and work respectively and don't see each other again until dinner time. They should be walking 3 miles to school. They should be wearing themselves out. Your children should be arriving at school exhausted, and they should be dreading the trip home as well. But then 20 years later, they should go around telling everyone, I walked 3 miles to school and home and I was grateful for it, which you weren't. You're lying. You're pretending you liked it. That's the same thing people do when they have children. They hate every minute of it. The birthing process is probably terrifying for women. Or as soon as they've had it, to say, oh, no, it's great. We're going to have another one next year. You should have one yourself. You should have several of these. Everyone should have several of these. Have at least two and then have an extra one in case one of them doesn't turn out very impressive or something. There's going to be some talk today on the program about obelisks. Now, I want to make something clear here from the outset. The problem with the talk later about obelisks is that the segment where I talk about obelisks is going to appear to be a two cats walk into a bar story, but it's not really. You're going to hear me later going two cats walk into a bar, but I guarantee you that within something like 60 to 90 seconds of me saying two cats walk into a bar, we're going to be either on to the subject of obelisks or approaching it very rapidly by talking about the concept of circular things. Be aware of that. If you get to a point where you hear me go, two cats walk into a bar, I don't think, oh Christ, it's the cat bar thing again. He's done about 100 of these since the comeback. Don't worry, it gets very quickly onto the obelisk thing and the cats in the bar are forgotten about very, 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 very quickly. Very quickly. In fact, I'd almost forgotten about it myself until I thought, wait a minute, where's the obelisk segment? I looked through my segment and said, oh, that's the obelisk thing. But wait, that starts with two cats walk into a bar. And sure enough, it does. But don't worry, that's just packaging. I don't think there's been an obelisk segment on the show before. And if there has, there certainly hasn't been like the two cats walk into a bar stories where I've done hundreds of them and are getting very, very old. Don't worry. So we've sorted that out now from the outset. Don't worry. It's not crap. I've started off my podcast by going, don't worry, the stuff that's coming up isn't shit. Surely you didn't think it was shit, did you? No, you didn't even know it was coming up. Before you even get to have that thought where you go, oh, I think this might be shit. No, I've got in there ahead and I've said, no, don't worry. It was never going to work any other way. If I'd planned a thing about obelisk, it wouldn't have worked. If someone came along to me from Sky Television or something, they said, we're commissioning programs here. We want you to do a 6-part series all about obelisks because I hear you have some things to say about obelisks. I want you to plan it. I'd have to say, no, I can't plan it. But I have to go two cats walk into a bar and approach it sideways and stumble upon the topic accidentally. That's how it works on here. And that's why this podcast isn't big, because everything happens accidentally. You go two cats walk into a bar. One of the cats goes straight up to the bar counter and says, hello, is that an obelisk over there? And the barman goes, over where? At the other side of the bar? No, that's the entrance to the gents toilet. In fact, it's the jacks. Let's not call it the gents. I don't want to gentrify this bar. In fact, that's called a pub, not a bar. If you're listening to this from a sensory deprivation chamber, I'd like you to try the following experiment, please, if you don't mind. And I know what you're thinking there. You're thinking, wait a minute. If I'm in a sensory deprivation chamber, I'm not going to be listening to this, am I? Well, not unless you've planned it, no. But I presume you plan ahead for these things. If you know you're going to be in a sensory deprivation chamber at some point and you hear me saying this at some point, you think, oh, maybe I'll keep this podcast and bring it with me into the sensory deprivation chamber. I presume it's got speakers on it where you can pipe in music or sounds or binary beats. You have the facility to pump in the sound of a podcast that you want to listen to while you're doing it. I know you think I'm going in to deprive myself of senses, not to listen to stuff. But I know that. But you choose what you want to deprive yourself of, and you can have a little change in your schedule every now and then and change your routine and do it differently as part of an experiment. You can bring me in there with you into your sensory deprivation chamber. If it helps, I won't say anything. I'll just make noises. Maybe I'll do the dog thing. When I do the dog thing, a special segment for you to listen to in your sensory deprivation chamber, where I make sure I don't input any knowledge or information about the outside world into your head. and make sure it's just noises that you might hear if there was a dog in there with you, or if there was someone in there talking about a dog. I can understand you don't want to listen to podcasts about the outside world, for you can bring in someone surely telling you a story to do with meditation, or I could go, once upon a time there was a dog, and it's going to sound different in there, echoing around the chamber, possibly causing ripples in the water, causing waves in the water that are moving around, and you're thinking, oh Christ, this is affecting everything, this is affecting all of my senses. Christ, I can't be having senses in here. I come in here to be deprived. I want to be deprived of this, not have extra of this in here. If I want to listen to someone saying dog, I'll do it in the car on my way home. Well, that's a bit closed-minded of you, I have to say. You've gone to the trouble of having a sensory deprivation chamber. All I ask of you is that you experiment. Say, for example, you want to listen to music. Surely to Christ, you like to listen to music sometimes. You do that in your sensory deprivation chamber. Why not? Music is relaxing. Music can be very relaxing. Very relaxing if you open yourself to it. It's not relaxing if you go, oh Christ, this music is unwanted. I want to block it out. I wasn't going to be very annoyed by it. No, be open to music. Be open to this in your sensory deprivation chamber. See, that music, one of the most primal things of the modern world. I know it doesn't go back as far as the beginning of humankind. We didn't have music at the very beginning, but we've had it for quite some time. 2,000 years ago, monks were going around chanting music. Music has the power to put you in a peaceful state of mind, the power to make you happy. It has the power to piss you off, but only if you let it have that power. Don't be letting it have that power. As I went and played a bit of harmonica now, you're going nuts, going, Christ, I don't want to hear that shit in my ears. These are my ears. Stop putting stuff into my ears without my consent. Relax, will you? Have a bit of an open mind about these things. There's more to life than sitting in silence in a darkened cave, going, I hear sounds coming from outside. What next? Is it an intrusion into my world? No. If you want to sit in silence, go asleep. That's what sleeping is for. Go asleep if you don't want anything in your senses. Just as if you're in a cinema and there's a film and you don't want to see it, you can just leave. Say you're watching Gladiator 2, I believe it's just come out. The sequel to Gladiator. I think they have some new Gladiator. Well, he's not that new because he says something like 1800 years before the first Gladiator movie came out on DVD. I don't know if he's set before the events depicted in that movie. He may or may not be. I mentioned a few weeks ago Nick Cave, the Australian singer who does dark songs. He does murder ballads and he once did a song with Kylie Minogue called The Wild Rose. Kind of moody fella. He wrote a treatment for Gladiator 2 about 10 years ago. He did it kind of as a joke. Someone said, do you want to write a sequel to Gladiator? And he did, and he put Jesus in it. He said, this is great because I know it's not ever going to come out, so I can do whatever I want. Look it up. Nick Cave wrote a Gladiator 2 involving Jesus. Because I didn't make that up. That's real. The original Gladiator movie, when it came out on DVD, I got a copy of that free with my first ever DVD player. And I showed this fella. He says, my name is something something Maximus something or other. I forget his exact name. He had some name that was fitting with the times and the region. But if you heard that name now, if you were a teacher in a school now, early 21st century, and a new child came in, he said, oh, hello, welcome to the class. Everybody, we've a new kid here. What's your name? Tell everyone your name. And he said, oh, my name is Felix Maximumius Habrigorius III. I'm the husband of a something something, father of a something something, and I shall have my revenge in this life or the next. If a kid said that in your class, hopefully you wouldn't laugh because you're the adult. But the other children in the room would think that was ridiculous, or else they'd be terrified. Imagine someone saying that now. Not that there's anything wrong with any of those names. But if you say it in that context, if you're an 8-year-old, you've just moved to a new area, your parents have dropped you off at the new school. This happened to me. September 1982. I think it was 6.5 days into the new school year. Coincidentally enough, I was 6.5 years old. We were set to move house that day. My father came and collected me from the school at lunchtime, so I said goodbye to the teacher. Here's your book back, because she lent me the book for the 6.5 days of that year that I would be there. So I gave her back the book and left. We went to our new home 80 miles away in the suburbs of Dublin. The next morning, I was brought to the new school. I remember the teacher calling, "Everyone, this is Neil. Say hello to Neil." I presume they said hello to me. She introduced me to some people. If I had gone in there and stood up and said, "Hello, my name's Felix Maximus II. This fellow over there, the king, he killed my wife and children and I will have my revenge in this life or the next." I don't think that would have gone well. I think the teacher would have been a little put out by it, for one thing. And that would have been bad. To annoy the teacher would be a bad thing. Having been dropped off in this new school, barely knew where I was. The first adult who's there responsible for getting me through this big change in my life, and I make all this shit about wanting to murder the king. We didn't have a king. This was in Ireland in the early 1980s. We had a president. It wasn't the type of president you Americans have. It was one of those presidents who's like a king, doesn't really do very much. It's a figurehead. And I wasn't going to go and kill the king. Who even was the king in those days? I think it was President Hillary. He was there for 2 terms. I don't really remember much about him. In fact, I don't think anybody remembers very much about him. He wasn't particularly interesting. I think President Reagan was in charge of America at the time, so he was your king over there. I remember him coming over on a state visit over here. It was a big TV thing. It was just like when the Pope came. They brought him down to some village. Said, "Oh, you're from here. Come in here and we'll serve you a pint of beer on international TV. And the world can see you having beer here." And of course, the world went, "Why is your beer black? And why is there white stuff on top of it? That's not beer. That's a dessert." Big pint glass filled nearly to the top with what looks like black forest gato and then an inch of cream on top. At least give him a spoon or something, or a fork. I remember that school. I turned up that day, settled into the class. The teacher did a bit of teaching, I did a bit of visiting, and I just moved up from this small village down the country, and the announcement came on the something I hadn't seen before. They had an electric loudspeaker, some headless principal in some office in another part of the building came on and said, "Hello, the shop is open now." She said it in Irish. She said, "Tá an shopper oscailte anois." I never heard of this before. This school has a shop. Was this a fucking shopping centre? This is great. So I thought, "Oh, the shop's open. I think I've got some money on me." I think I had 5 pence in my pocket for some reason. And the teacher went, "Anyone who wants to go to the shop, go ahead." So I followed the other kids who were going to the shop. We got to leave the classroom in the middle of a lesson and go down to this place that was the shop. Turned out the shop was a cupboard under the stairs. It was run by the principal and it was just selling stationery. I think I bought an eraser with my 5 pence. I was a bit disappointed. It was only later in life, I think it was about 10 years later, I finally got to be in a school that had a sweet shop or a tuck shop. In fact, I had 2 tuck shops because it was a segregated school. The younger children had 1 tuck shop in their yard and the 5th and 6th years had a separate tuck shop in their yard. Now, I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, what in the name of Christ has that got to do with Gladiator? Well, I think I just explained that. The whole, where I turned up and if I had said, "Hello, my name is Felix Maximus the something, husband of a murdered wife, father of murdered children, and I shall have my revenge in this life or the next." Can you imagine that going well? Then being introduced to the kids beside me who would spend the next 5 years of my life I would spend with them, because we spent 2 years in that school and then we went on to the school where the older boys go. The same kids were there. That was a very important moment because I was being introduced to these kids. You don't go around threatening their king. Even if they don't have a king, that's getting off to a bad start. So those moments are important. And of course, that could have got back to the old town. It turned out that teacher in the new school was a daughter of some woman who ran the Beaver Scouts in Thomastown, who we knew. So it's not like we were getting to a whole new beginning where you could just go, oh, nobody knows us here. I can just make up a new identity. Say I'm somethingus Maximus and I'm here to destroy the king. No, because that would get back. The teacher who lived there in that new place, even though it was 80 or 90 miles away, her mother was from the old town, so she could easily have found out about that. He said, that fella's not Felix Maximus at all. That's not his name at all. You've been deceived. And I'm a little surprised at his parents, because they're reasonably upstanding members of the community, and they're just letting him do that. No. You couldn't do that. That's just not on.
Into your head.
Two cats walk into a bar. One of the cats goes straight up to the bar counter and says, hello, can I have a pint of your finest Guinness, please? And the man behind the bar says, certainly, sir, a pint of your finest Guinness coming right up. Coming right up, I'm going to put it in this glass. Be like what they do in the future with the food, except I'm going to put it in a glass because it's liquid. We drink liquid out of a round glass in this era. I say a round glass. It's cylindrical. It's not the bottom of it has flashed, the top of it has flashed. It's just that it's round and I suppose that's not really round, is it? A round glass is not really round unless it's like a wine glass or a brandy glass or something that's curved. A standard straight beer glass is not really round. It's curved around in that you have a flat sheet of glass that's folded around until it's a cylindrical shape. You wouldn't refer to a toilet roll inner tube as round, would you? Well, maybe you would. I wouldn't. It's only round in the 2D sense of the word round. You see a circle, that's round. But it's not as round as a sphere. If you saw a circle and you put that in the real world, you got a 2D circle. You draw a 2D circle on a piece of paper and then you cut that out. You have a flat circle. You wouldn't go around saying, look, this is round. This is round. It's a big round thing. It's not. It's not round unless you turn it into a 3D round thing, like a football or something. Then it's round. It's not really round until it's 3D. So if the only thing round about a straight beer glass is the curve going round the edge, the round wall, that doesn't count. You see a gas chimney sticking up out of the ground, a big gas chimney like you have on power plants. You wouldn't call that round. No, that's a tall tower thing. You see an obelisk, that's not round, even though the outside is curved. That's not round. What is an obelisk? Does anyone know what an obelisk is? I'm not sure they do. There is an obelisk in South County Dublin somewhere. I think it's somewhere between Shank Hill and that place up where they have the artificial ski slopes. There's an obelisk up there, but nobody knows what it is. We used to go there on our bicycles. There was this little lane where you'd get to the top of it and there was an obelisk there. I can't even remember what it was. Just some little tower thing. What makes it an obelisk? Nobody knows. Nobody knows what an obelisk is. In fact, I'm surprised. I'm surprised there even is a word. I don't think most people even have an obelisk near where they live. I don't live there anymore. I lived there for a few years as a child. I lived within 3 or 4 miles of an obelisk. I only heard of being referred to as an obelisk maybe half a dozen times in my whole life. So the fact that I've even heard the word obelisk seems unlikely. Nobody talks about that obelisk at all. Where that obelisk is, there's now a big motorway upon which tens of thousands of people drive every day, probably within a couple of minutes of that obelisk. But you don't hear anyone saying, oh, you know that obelisk, we should go and see the obelisk sometimes. No, maybe they do. Maybe it's a local thing. Maybe people just say, we're going to go and see that hill. And they don't think of it as being the site of an obelisk. They think of it as being a hill that they're going to see. And the obelisk just happens to be something that's there in the background. But it's not in the background. It's right there on top of the hill, isn't it? There's a hill and then there's an obelisk where people going around saying, oh, let's go and cycle up the hill. And you don't say, we'll cycle up to the obelisk. You'll just say, we'll cycle to the top of that hill out near that place. I don't know. I haven't even heard that obelisk mentioned, I don't think, in about 20 years. In fact, I don't think I've even heard anyone outside of my immediate family reference it. Suffice to say, there is an obelisk there. I can't imagine they demolished it. I think we'd have heard about that. They'd have said, oh, they're demolishing this before any of us were even aware there's an obelisk there. And what is an obelisk? It sounds important or of value. They're going to demolish it. Why? The same has happened with, funnily enough, in Dublin Bay, there's a thing called a pigeon house, kind of on a peninsula, an old gasworks or something. It's two big chimneys painted orange and white. You can see them for miles and miles around. And they were going to demolish them. And everyone said, no, you will not demolish them. Fuck you. No, in fact, repaint them so they look even more striking and ugly, because they're a part of the landscape now and we like them. Two hideous looking chimneys, they said, no, they're part of the landscape now. They're our Statue of Liberty. We're going to keep them. So they kept them. So I think that's what would happen with the obelisk. If you're listening to this in a public bath, now I don't mean in the traditional sense of a public bath, whereby you have a bathing area, such as a swimming pool, or as they had in the old days, these areas, there used to be one, Dunbray Head, called Naylor's Cove. There used to be a public bath. It wasn't a public bath anymore when I lived there as a young teenager. There was a little cove at the side of Bray Head, which is a seaside mountain. It used to be a public bath, so there was bits of straight wall around it. It was basically the sea. It was a little cove, like something you'd expect a famous fly to end up exploring and finding some criminal there. One of those adventure books, especially the Hardy Boys, because the Hardy Boys was a series of boys' adventure books I used to get from the library as a child. They were 17 and 18 respectively, and they were all driving cars. They were both able to drive speedboats sometimes. And I think if I remember rightly, either one of the main boys in it or their friends was able to operate a helicopter or a plane. I forget which. I think it was probably a helicopter. I think they went around on hang gliders as well. There's probably one of them had a truck, one of their friends. Oh, they all had vehicles. 17 and 18-year-old kids in these adventure things. They had whatever they needed. It was a bit like one of these modern shows. I've been re-watching Criminal Minds lately. They were a team of criminal behavioural experts, and they go around the country assisting finding serial killers. They go on their private jet. We better go immediately. Wheels up in 10. That's what Hodge says. If it's slightly less urgent, like a missing adult, they say, oh, wheels up in 20. If it's a serial killer who they think is going to strike again soon, he might say, oh, this is very urgent. Wheels up in 15. They never show what that means in practice. One minute he's going wheels up in 15 and then he's running off to do something in the office, presumably to make some photocopies before he leaves and then grab his overnight bag that he keeps ready. The next minute they showed him sitting on the plane. They've got some woman back at the office who's talking to them over video phone and making presentations. That's another thing, that show. They're called in urgently in the middle of the night because there's a new case. Some serial killer is striking and they have to strike while the iron's hot. So get into the office now. We'll tell you where we're going and then they'll go wheels up in 15. So they go in and one of the women has set up a whole very involved presentation using PowerPoint. Get into the office now so we can make a presentation. These two women are missing. Here's a nice picture of them. Flashy graphics and all. The picture comes up. She touches it with her wand and the next picture comes up. And here's a picture of the dead fella. Here was a picture of your one. And this other picture is particularly graphic. I don't want to look at that, but I've sent it to your tablet. That's great. Thanks for that presentation that you've been up all night making. And now suddenly it's very urgent. We have to be on the plane in 20 minutes, apparently. Bollocks. No. I think I got distracted there. I was in the middle of explaining what Naylor's Cove is. And it's just a normal cove, but especially the ruins of a public bathing area. It's the ruins, I think it used to have a roof on it. And it's got some, as I say, there's walls around the water. People still go there and swim. They swim in the ruins of these baths. Now, in those days, they were called baths, presumably because nobody had baths in their house. They'd go down here and they'd have a bath. They'd bathe in these places. They take off their shirts and their trousers and their socks and their shoes, and they take off any electrical devices they had on them. They didn't have phones in those days. But I don't know what electrical devices people carried in those days. Maybe you carried your portable iron lung. Are they electric? I'm not sure. Are they portable? Actually, now that you mention it, they were never portable, were they? No. People used to have these things back in the days of either polio or that other thing. People would get polio and then some of them would spend much of the rest of their lives inside a thing called an iron lung. Stopped their whole body caving in on itself. Something to do with air pressure or I don't know the exact details, but you had to spend much of your day, rather tragically, inside a metal tank. A bit like that thing that Joe Rogan goes on about. He likes to go on about his sensory deprivation tank. He has guests around in his studio sometimes. He says, oh, you should try my sensory deprivation tank. Hang around after I've interviewed you for 3.5 hours and try out my tank. I used to listen to that show. Invariably, when he says that, they say, oh, that sounds great. And then they make their excuses. If you go around to some fella's house, even if you may know him through your job as a comedian or a podcast guest or something, and he says, you want to go up into the attic and try my sensory deprivation tank. Spend an hour in my locked tank in silence in the dark, under the water. Well, in the water. It's a flotation thing. You float on the water. So I presume it's water filled with 8 tons of salt or something. He doesn't even ask these guests if they're able to swim. Does he put them on an inflatable bed? What happens if there's a puncture? You're in the middle of your hour and you can't swim, and you're sinking into this thing Joe Rogan has. You can't take out your phone and ring him and say, hello, I seem to be having some trouble. Can you let me out? I can't find a way out. I know you've given me all the instructions on how to get out. Just enter the code 6664 into the pin thing. But I can't find the pin thing, and I'm afraid to touch anything because it's full of water. I didn't bring my phone. I'm from the old days where when you went bathing, you took off your clothes, you removed all your electrical devices, and you got into the water and had a swim. You spent 3 hours on his podcast telling him about the ancient aliens on Mars. He says, back in the old days, the aliens came along. They showed us how to make pyramids. They said, it was a thing you've never seen before. That has been the tradition ever since. Whenever anyone goes away anywhere, they come home with Toblerones, especially if it involves going to an airport. You buy a Toblerone at the airport and you bring the, make damn sure the Christ is hell when you get home that anyone in your family gets a Toblerone as a memento of your visit to wherever you are. And that's what the aliens did. Except instead of it being a chocolate thing, because a Toblerone is a chocolate triangular thing based on the Swiss Alps, the mountains, aliens used to come over and say, oh, we've come a long way to see you, and we don't really want to introduce you to chocolate yet. We're going to let you discover that yourself. For Christ's sake, you have to do something yourself. But we'll show you how to make a pyramid, a very special pyramid. And we'll put a little antenna into it for a secret purpose. And Joe Rogan will, of course, say, wait a minute. Have you been in a sensory deprivation chamber ever? And you say, no, why? Is that a threat? What in the name of Christ? No. Why are you threatening me? From what I understand as well, Joe Rogan has moved to somewhere, was it Texas or Arizona or somewhere like that, the arse end of nowhere. Anyway, that's pyramids for you. I've just been listening back to that earlier segment, concerned that he might be able to hear me absent-mindedly playing with the strap of my phone in the background. I think you'll agree my fears were needless. It wasn't that bad at all. There was maybe a slight bit of noise. I'm not sure you even got to hear it. That's good. I did mention that I was worried that he might hear me playing with the strap of my phone hitting against a microwave. And you're probably listening to that and thinking, wait, did he say microwave? I presume he meant microphone. No, I did not. And if I was playing with the strap of my phone against her microphone, I would have noticed myself doing that sooner, for one thing, as the microphone's right in front of my face. In fact, it shouldn't be that near. Hang on a minute, I'll move it a bit back, a bit, turn it a bit. But no, you're probably thinking, wait, did he say microwave? And then some of you are thinking, wait, did he say microwave and mean microphone? And then some of you are saying, did he say microwave and mean microwave? And then the more attentive are saying, oh yes, that's that microphone he's mentioned before. He's mentioned that at least twice in the last year, so I know all about that. Oh, no further explanation necessary, thank you very much. And if that's you, you can skip the next minute or two while I explain. But there is a microwave in here, right beside me. It's in use as a table. It's waiting to be sent to the recycling place. Not particularly urgent. Next time we're passing the microwave recycling place, we can drop it in if we remember to put it in the car. So until then, it's in here as a kind of side table. In portrait mode. Now that needs explanation as well, because you're listening to this thinking, wait a minute, a microwave in portrait mode. Yes, a microwave in portrait mode. It's sitting on its end because that makes it a taller table. But also, you might be listening to this on archive.org 100 years from now. I'm thinking, firstly, what's a microwave possibly? And if that's the case, I can't really help you with that, just look it up. You might also be thinking, wait a minute, a microwave? Are they very tall things? They're in portrait mode already, that's how we use them. You put your food in a tall, narrow cup thing that's 2 feet tall and then you put it inside your portrait microwave. Well yes, back here we have landscape microwaves. In fact, we think they're the norm, so it doesn't occur to us that there may someday be portrait microwaves, so they're different from yours. We have flat containers called plates, and you put food onto them and then you put it in your horizontal microwave landscape mode. I know you probably finally realised. Possibly from watching Star Trek, because you see a lot of this on Star Trek. Some of the aliens put their food in something that's more like a chalice or a cup full of live worms or whatever it is that the racist Star Trek staff are openly mocking or saying, oh, look, your food is disgusting. Eat those things out of vertical cups. Stops the moving insects from getting out easily. Eating a plate of live worms, you don't want a plate they can just crawl off while you're not looking. So that's why I'm thinking, here in the real world outside of Star Trek, 100 years from now, where you're listening, you may well have more vertical foodware than we have. In fact, it may well be that you've decided plates are a disgusting remnant of hundreds of years ago, back when people didn't care whether your food could crawl off the plate or whether other food could crawl onto your plate and get into your food. A plate is not hygienic at all. Anything can crawl onto a plate and insert itself into your food. Your food isn't safe on that at all.